Call the meeting to order. Please rise for the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Clerk, read the roll.
John Steinbrink.
Here.
Monica Juhas.
Here.
Steve Kmorkwitz.
Here.
Clyde Allen.
Here.
Mike Serpy is excused.
That brings us to item 4, minutes of the meeting, and it's for August 5th and August 19th of 2013, presented to board members in written form.
Motion to approve.
Second.
Motion by Monica, second by Clyde. Any discussion on any of the minutes? Hearing none, those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? So carries. Now we move on to item 5, citizens' comments.
There are no sign-ups tonight, Mr. President.
Anybody wishing to speak? Hearing none, I'm going to close citizens' comments. Move on to item 6, administrator's report.
Mr. President, tonight we have with us for his first meeting our new director of information technologies, Daniel Henry. He's hiding out in the back, the yellow shirt. Dan comes to us with an extensive background in IT. His most recent stop was the Kenosha Unified School District. So we look forward to having him, and we put him to work right away. He had a whole list of issues the first day, so but we're really glad he's on board. He's a real good addition to the village.
Thank you, Mike. That brings us to item 7, new business. First item being item 8, to receive the Planning Commission recommendation and consider ordinance 13-36 to amend the 2035 Comprehensive Land Use Plan, which is MAF 9.9 and Appendix 10-13, to remove the urban reserve designation from Lot 19 of the Westfield subdivision located at the northwest corner, Highway 50 and 91st Avenue, for the proposed Goddard School development.
And I would ask that both items A and B taken up by the board at the same time. I'll be making one presentation.
Okay.
Do you want to bring item
sure.
B?
Sure. Item B is to receive the Planning Commission recommendation and consider Ordinance 13-37 and 13-38 for a zoning map and text amendment to rezone a portion of Lot 19 of the Westfield subdivision from the B2 Community Business District with an urban landholding overlay district to B2 Community Business District with a planned unit development overlay district, and to amend the legal description to include a portion of Lot 19 relating to the proposed development of Goddard School.
Mr. President, members of the board in the audience, this is a request by Jonah Hetland of Bear Development. He represents the owner of the property at the northwest corner of 91st Avenue and Highway 50 in Pleasant Prairie. It's the area that's identified as the Westfield Commercial Development. They're requesting two things tonight, actually three separate items, Ordinance 1336 to amend the village's comprehensive plan, and then Ordinances 1337 and 1338, both for a zoning map and a zoning text amendment. As they made their initial request this spring and summer, they were working to put together a Goddard School that is proposed to be located at that northwest corner of 91st Avenue and Highway 50, as you can see on the slide. One of the things that they were working on is to, in working with their bank, was to define that all of the property, including the entrance on 91st Avenue and the cross-access easement that traverses their lot that goes to the second lot to the west, that all of that area, along with all of the easements, be shown on their particular Lot 20. So the purpose of this request is twofold. One, previously the board adopted a lot line adjustment, but what we need to do is amend the comprehensive plan so that additional area of 5,312 square feet that was on Lot 19 that needs to be transferred to Lot 20, that area is reflected correctly on the comprehensive plan as a B2 community commercial area along with the PUD. So it needs to be in the commercial land use designation, not in an urban reserve area, and it needs to be appropriately zoned into the B2 PUD district. This kind of shows it a little bit better. It's the area that's identified with the red star. It's like a triangle area. So, again, we're moving some land just over 5,000 square feet from Lot 19 to Lot 20, and we're amending the comprehensive plan as well as the zoning text and the zoning map. So everything, when they close on their project with the bank and they move forward with respect to the building permits, everything that they are going to be doing work on and constructing is entirely on their Lot 20. These items will be before the Village Plan Commission at their last meeting, and the staff and the Plan Commission recommend approval. Again, the three items are Ordinance 13-36, 13-36, 13-37, and 13-38. A roll call vote is needed on the first.
I'll make a motion to approve Ordinance 13-36.
Second. Motion by Monica, second by Steve for adoption of Ordinance 13-36. Any further discussion? If not,
John Steinberg?
Aye.
Monica Uhas?
Aye.
Steve Kmorkowitz?
Aye.
Clyde Allen?
Aye.
Motion carries.
I make a motion to approve Ordinance 13-37 and 13-38.
Second. Motion by Clyde for adoption of Ordinance 13-37 and 13-38. Second by Steve. Any further discussion on these two motions? Hearing none. Do you want these separately?
No, one's fine.
Okay. Those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? So carries. That concludes items A and B, and we'll move on to item C, which is to receive the Planning Commission recommendation. Consider Ordinance 13-39 for a zoning text amendment for the proposed supercharging station for electric vehicles at Pleasant Prairie Premium Outlets, located at 11211 120th Avenue and 11601 108th Street.
Mr. President, members of the board, Tesla Motors, Tesla is proposing to install a supercharging station for electric vehicles in the parking lot of the Pleasant Prairie Premium Outlets, located at 11211 120th Avenue and 11601 108th Street. Tesla is a U.S.-based company that designs and manufactures the world's leading electric vehicles. They've delivered more than 10,000 vehicles to customers in 31 countries. As part of their mission to further the adoption of electric vehicles, Tesla has initiated the deployment of a fast charging solution called the Supercharger. These supercharger stations are proposed to be located along popular and well-traveled routes throughout the country, and they will be in fast and convenient networks for Tesla customers. These stations are able to recharge 50% battery capacity in as little as 20 minutes and a full charge in less than an hour. Due to the fact that the proposed charging station is located within the Premium Outlets Mall, and they'll be using only 8 parking spaces, and because the equipment will be fully screened from view through some fencing, there's going to be little or no impact on the adjacent properties. And as you can see on the slide, this is Pleasant Prairie Premium Outlets. This is I-94 and 120th Avenue and 108th Street. Right here at the very corner is where Nike is located, and they are proposing to place it in this parking lot just to the west of Nike, in the bermed area across the street from the Radisson and the Chancery. This gives you a little bit better perspective from a aerial and from a landscape perspective. Again, where the car is parked, they're intending to kind of work it into the berm so that this charging station, again, is going to be somewhat screened on that side as well as on the other side. Again, this is somewhat unique for this area. This is the first supercharging station in the state of Wisconsin, but it will allow this network to be built up. The cars are manufactured in California, but they have customers throughout the United States, so they want to be able to have these charging stations on networks for people to be able to continue traveling throughout the United States. Premium Outlets has developed a relationship with Tesla, and a lot of their charging stations will go where the Premium Outlet malls are, because a lot of people are traveling to and through, and those malls are located on major interstates. This gives you another perspective. There's some demolition work with respect to the grade and such out there, but they are going to actually cut into the bermed hillside. A lot of that berm and landscaping will remain, and they will continue to landscape on either side. Again, the spaces will be directly south of that berm. There will be some additional cameras that will be placed on the corner of the building on top of where Nike's space is to have some additional camera views of this particular area. This is an unmanned charging station. The site basically will be monitored by Premium Outlets with respect to landscaping and parking lot and things like that. And a lot of the other things are electronically monitored by them. With respect to some signage for this particular location, there will be some signage, but everyone's car, Tesla car, is designed with a GPS navigation system to show them where these charging stations are and how to get to them. So there won't be any excessive amount of signage. We are recommending that they have a sign on the interstate as well. Part of their request, in addition to going to the Plan Commission for a site and operational plan, is the fact that they want to be 24 hours. And so the purpose of the request is to amend the PUD for Premium Outlets to allow this charging station to be utilized 24 hours a day. And so this is a matter that went to the Village's Plan Commission. The staff and the Plan Commission recommend approval. I'm going to just show you a couple of other slides that talk or at least illustrate some of the site plan for the charging station. Again, it's going to be basically enclosed, so you won't see the transformer and all the other types of equipment behind the fencing in the other areas. Staff recommends approval as presented of the PUD modification to allow for the supercharging station at Pleasant Prairie Premium Outlets. Again, this is a text amendment, Ordinance 13-39.
Move to approve.
Second. Motion by Steve for adoption of Ordinance 13-39, second by Clyde. Any further discussion?
Yeah, just a question for my knowledge. This station is going to be open 24 hours.
Correct.
But Prime Outlet is not open 24 hours.
That's correct.
So that means it's going to be the possibility that cars parking over there being charged when there's nobody around?
That's possible if someone's on the interstate or if someone stays overnight at the Radisson Hotel. They could charge their vehicle here. They could go over to the Chancery right across the street and go to the restaurant. But typically premium hours are either 9 or 10 at night for the foreclosure. So, yes, someone could come between 10 at night and 8 in the morning, or 8 or 9 in the morning.
If I understood correct, in the Planning Commission, the time limit was 1 hour.
That's correct, for them to get a fully charged vehicle.
Okay.
That's correct. But that hour could be any time after Premium closes until Premium opens as well, because they could stop for 24 hours.
Doesn't mean somebody can stay over there all night.
And their cars wouldn't be charging all night either.
Okay, thank you.
Any further questions? Hearing none, those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? So carries. Brings us to item D, to receive the Planning Commission recommendation and consider a master conceptual plan for the proposed Riverview Corp Park, generally located east of I-94 and south of 110th Street, north of 122nd Street.
Mr. President, members of the board and the audience, this is a request by Barkgood Venture One Real Estate, and he is requesting a master conceptual plan for a proposed business or a corporate park on the east side of the interstate. Specifically, he's requesting to develop approximately 250 acres of land for approximately 5 office and manufacturing production buildings. These buildings would range in size from 87,000 square feet to 428,000 square feet. The site is located, again, just east. This is I-94 going north-south, and the buildings would be just east of that location. 165 is at the north of the map, and 122nd Street is on the south. As you know, Corporate Drive extends to the south and then turns into 116th Avenue, and 120th Avenue is just west of that. The proposal is to extend 116th Avenue south and eventually extend here part of the frontage road north. And at some point, as part of our evaluation, review, and approval and permitting process, this would be a connected roadway sooner than later as the sites begin to develop. And they're proposing 5 office and manufacturing production buildings. This is a site that several months ago, back in the spring, we had identified as a village that there would be 3 major areas of the village that would be rezoned into this M5, the production manufacturing district. These are areas that focus primarily with uses of production, manufacturing, office, research and development, and ancillary or secondary uses would be warehouses. So these are not intended to be warehouse-type buildings. Less than 25% of these buildings can be used for warehousing purposes. They're limited with respect to their dock doors and things like that. As you get closer to the interstate, just like those other uses close to Highway 31, we are looking to improve some of the imaging along the interstate. But in addition, we are looking for offices and businesses that would not necessarily be warehouses, but we were trying to actually increase the number of jobs per acre as a production or manufacturing area. All of the buildings, as well as the declaration of covenants that they have drafted for this development that we've reviewed, as well as the staff, do focus on the M5 uses and the M5 type of development. The developer has gone through and done a lot of the environmental field delineations and stakings on the property. They are in the permitting process, and they're also working through with the Wisconsin DNR and the Corps of Engineers in order to obtain any necessary permits and approvals to keep going through the process. Again, this is part of a multi-step process, just like every other development in the village of Pleasant Prairie. So the first step is this master conceptual plan process. The next step is to complete a neighborhood plan for this particular area. This is just a close-up of the 5 buildings, as you had seen on your screens as well. This photo actually shows the 2 cul-de-sacs initially, and then eventually there will be those cul-de-sacs will be removed and the extension will be made, and it will be a connected public roadway. This is the neighborhood plan map for the village. As you know, the neighborhoods have been divided by geographic areas, bounded by major streets, rivers, highways. And the area that we are looking to do a neighborhood plan for, which is the next step for this project, should it be approved, is this Lakeview West area. Much of this area is developed. Some is vacant. There's some vacant area kind of to the northeast corner of I-94 and 165. There's some vacant area, obviously, south of Premium Outlets. And we're actually going to look at expanding this neighborhood plan for our engineering and planning purposes down to 122nd. So we're going to bring in just a small corner of the Riverview neighborhood. It makes some sense because of the interconnections of the highways and the infrastructure. So we're actually going to do most of one neighborhood and then just bring up a little corner of another neighborhood. The staff comments go into a great deal of discussion about the M5 district. Again, I've presented that several times to the Plan Commission and to the board, so I'm not going to review all of the details of that M5, but it's good to know that the first area of that M5 is looking to develop. And again, our main concern here, the main statement we wanted to make, is while there have been and still are sufficient economic opportunities for the construction of warehouses and distribution facilities in the existing corporate parks, it's important to conserve some land resources and economic infrastructure to support a little bit more denser employment opportunities in the village. And this is one of those areas. The staff comments do also go through a lot of the detail with respect to the conceptual plan, what's required with respect to those steps, the neighborhood planning steps, and also if it's warranted, the evaluation by the staff of a possible expansion of a TID for this particular area. There are a number of staff comments from engineering as well as the fire department. Again, this is the first step in the planning process, but the staff felt it was very important to bring this project to you to let you know that we are moving forward with another corporate park development within the village, and we wanted to make sure that the board was good and wanted to give us some positive direction with respect to this development. Again, this is the master conceptual plan detail.
Well, I think that he alluded to, this is since the development of Lakeview Corporate Park and the anticipated development at some level of the Abbott property, this is probably our most significant effort at taking advantage of a location to the interstate, our location to existing utilities and infrastructure that could be extended at a not a great expense to service an area where we can, within a 200-acre area, create as many opportunities as possible. If you look at how development has occurred over time in Pleasant Prairie or even the area, one of the things that the village has been able to accommodate and been successful at is as the marketplace has spun up, somebody new that wants to either move to Pleasant Prairie or start a new business here, you know, the real challenge and the thing that has made us successful is being able to have development plans for developments that are ready to go or nearby ready to go. So as Dean indicated, we're in that process of getting the conceptual plan approved. But I want the board to understand that, you know, we have engaged engineering services. We're doing our own engineering. We have traffic studies underway. We're doing a financial analysis for TID improvements, which will be necessary to make this happen. And it's my recommendation to the board that although we are at this conceptual phase, that we move ahead with due diligence and have this thing ready to go. You know, we're coming up on a period here where construction, for practical purposes, isn't going to take place because of winter construction. But, you know, my goal from the staff perspective, and I think the developer can speak for his own perspective, is to be able to have all the planning underway, you know, get everything done and ready to go so that at first possible break in the weather next year, we're able to initiate construction of a first phase of improvements. As we did in Lakeview Corporate Park, you know, we're not looking to construct the whole thing at once, but we do think there's a logical phasing for this, and if the market is such that there's a demand for phase two to happen earlier than we anticipate, you know, as long as the tax base supports it, I think that's something we should embrace. As Gene indicated, it is a departure, even though somebody could locate in Lakeview Corporate Park and construct a manufacturing facility. The economics are such that they're going to tend to cluster lots together to be able to do warehousing wherever possible, and that's they've got that ability through zoning and the TIF. And this is where we're making a definite step to go away from that and move towards the manufacturing business. So I think this is a staff perspective. We've been looking at ways we can manage the growth of warehouses in the village and come up with something that's going to be more sustainable over the long run for the community. So you know, I fully support this, and I think, you know, from an economic development standpoint, we need to move with this, you know, this process with due diligence, but I'll fool around with it and have it ready to go for next year. I don't know if Mr. Good is here. I saw him walk in. He's the biggest briefcase around. He has some maps he wants to, or you know, designs he wants to show the village. You could do that also if you want to.
Sure. Would you come up and... Gene, while he's coming up, you had alluded to expanding into the Riverview neighborhood. You meant something woods down there.
River Woods?
Yeah, River Woods.
There's it's just the name of the neighborhood. There's a neighborhood down here. These are the neighborhood boundaries throughout the village of Pleasant Prairie. And the River Woods neighborhood is down here. The Lakeview West is located right on the east side of the interstate. Well, based on this particular project and how we'd like to see the Riverview Corporate Park develop out, we're going to look at putting a neighborhood plan together for all the undeveloped areas in here, but we're also going to incorporate a corner of the River Woods neighborhood as part of his neighborhood plan, just because of the fact that it makes some sense from a transportation network and an infrastructure standpoint.
Yeah, you had said Riverview. And
oh.
I remember Riverview as a kid, but that's a long time ago. Okay, so my name is Mark Good. I'm a principal with Venture One Real Estate. We're located at 250 Parkway Drive in Lincolnshire, Illinois. We're very excited to be here. We've been working with the village for, I think, 6 or 7 months on this plan. We think it's an exciting plan. It delivers a type of building, facility, and product that doesn't really exist anywhere in the region, I believe, in terms of the stature of the corporations that we'd be able to attract and the types of facilities that we would be able to construct here. So we think there's a unique opportunity to do that at this particular location due to the proximity to the highway. My firm is doing this in partnership with another company. Their name is Clayco. They're one of the largest design-build firms in the country and have done quite a few corporate facilities as well as institutional facilities, hospitals, and residential facilities throughout the country. I have a little something on our entity if you want to know about it, but it's called Clayco Venture One Development Services, and that would be the entity that would move forward here. We believe there's a great opportunity here, and we think that this project will complement the other projects that exist in the village as well. So that we're not looking to directly compete, obviously, with any warehouses or distribution centers that are here, but really deliver a corporate product with a lot of glass and a lot of flair to attract corporations that are looking to move their headquarters here, major divisions, or manufacturing or production. So we greatly appreciate this opportunity, and I can answer any questions on our firm, our project, or other developments we've been involved in.
Any comments or questions? I think looking at that area, using that glass and laying it out, it's going to be a really, really nice area for buildings back there and development. So, and I think your reputation says you're going to do a good job. So,
well, thank you.
A pretty thorough discussion was held during the Planning Commission.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not sure if there are any other questions. But
as I'm looking for the traffic impact analysis, well, I think it's going to be very critical to for the traffic going to the prime outlets and coming here to this project. That's the part I like to see. But anyway, welcome here to the village because I love to see projects coming in.
Thank you.
Thank you.
There was a significant amount of concern over cul-de-sac, and I was really touched that some of the developers in the area had exhibited so much concern over a future cul-de-sac, how long it might be, and the village's and a long-standing policy of just managing cul-de-sacs in their districts. And you can never have one that's too long, and you can never have one that's too short. Been there for too long. So the PIA will resolve that issue, and I'm sure they'll resolve everyone's concern over an old, long cul-de-sac.
Thank you, Mike.
I'll make a motion to accept the master conceptual plan for the proposed Riverview Corporate Park.
Second.
Motion by Monica, second by Clyde. Any other discussion on this item? If not, those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? So carries. That brings us to item E. That is to receive the Planning Commission recommendation and consider ordinance 13-40 to correct and amend 2035 Comprehensive Land Use Plan, Map 9.9 and update Appendix 10-3 to identify the field delineated wetlands in the park, recreation, and other open space lands with a field verified wetland land use designation on the vacant property located between 88th and 91st Avenues and 76th Street and Prairie Ridge Boulevard.
Mr. President, I'd ask you and the board to take up items F, G, and H as well. I'll be making one presentation on all four items.
And also to include item F, to receive the Planning Commission recommendation and consider ordinance 13-41 to rezone the field delineated wetlands of the C1 Lowland Resource Conservancy District on a 9.9-acre vacant parcel generally located between 88th and 91st Avenues and 76th Street and the Prairie Ridge Boulevard. And item G is to receive the Planning Commission recommendation and consider a conceptual plan for the proposed office development on a vacant 9.9-acre property generally located between 88th and 91st Avenues and 76th Street and Prairie Ridge Boulevard. Jean?
Mr. President, this request, or actually there are four requests on the agenda, all relate to the same property area, which is located south of 76th Street, north of Prairie Ridge Boulevard, between 88th Avenue, which is County H, and 91st Avenue. These are requests are coming to us from SB 1 for four different requests. The first, comprehensive land use plan amendment based on detailed wetland delineations that were completed on the site by a qualified biologist that have been approved by the Wisconsin DNR. The second item is to rezone the specific field delineated wetlands into the C1 Lowland Resource Conservancy District. The third request is for a conceptual plan for the development of four different potential office sites. As you know, part of the process, once we approve the comprehensive plan and the neighborhood plan, which we have for the Prairie Ridge area, is to take a look at a detailed conceptual plan. This is a more simplified version that's up on the screen that specifically identifies the size of buildings, location of buildings, cross-access, parking lots, the number of parking spaces, preservation of the existing delineated wetland, which there's one right in the center of the site, and there's one over on the east adjacent to 88th Avenue, as well as detention on the site. To look at cross-access easements between the parties and to make sure things do line up. In addition, conceptual utilities were also submitted so that the engineers could take a look at the conceptual sewer, water, and storm sewer infrastructure as to how the site is going to be developed. So, based on the information that was presented, they are presenting this conceptual plan. At this time, we don't have the next step of the process, which is the site and operational plans. They wanted to take it to a certain point to see that there's support by the village. And so the final step that they're asking for today is actually the certified survey map. And there is a particular developer that does want to purchase Lot 1, which is the first office building adjacent to 76th Street. Lot 2 will just remain as a separate lot at this time, and it would be further subdivided in the future. Again, Lot 2 could be further subdivided into three different tenants. The one building that's at the very northwest corner, that's BMO Harris. That's the existing bank that was built out there. So, again, what we're trying to do is to make sure that there is orderly development when and if it does occur. And the certified survey map does reflect all the appropriate easements as well as all of the access information that we do need for the cross-access. The Plan Commission held a public hearing for the Comprehensive Land Use Plan Map 9.9, again, to modify the land use plan map to reflect the field-delineated wetlands. They held a public hearing for the rezoning of the field-delineated wetlands into the C1 Lowland Resource Conservancy District, and they held a public hearing for the conceptual plan for the four-lot future office development at this location. Finally, the last item they considered was a certified survey map, which they recommended approval. All of these are subject to all of the comments and conditions as outlined in the staff memorandum. The staff also recommends approval of all four items.
We got to take those individual. I move to approve ordinance 1340.
Second. Motion by Steve, second by Clyde for adoption of ordinance 13-40.
Roll call vote. Clyde Allen?
Aye.
Monica Juhas?
Aye.
Steve Kmorkwitz?
Aye.
John Steinbrink?
Aye.
Motion to approve ordinance 13-41.
Second.
Motion by Monica and second by Steve for adoption of ordinance 13-41. Those in favor, or is there any further discussion? If not, those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? So carries.
Make a motion to approve the conceptual plan.
Second.
Motion by Clyde, second by Monica for adoption of conceptual plan. Any further discussion? If not, those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? So carries.
Motion to approve certified survey map.
Second.
Motion by Clyde, second by Steve for adoption of the certified survey map. That's to subdivide a vacant 9.9 parcel. Any further discussion? Hearing none, those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? So carries. Thank you, Gene. Next is item I, to consider an agreement with Premium Outlets related to the Midnight Madness sale on November 28th through 29th. We're getting to that time of year.
President, members of the board, the agreement you have before you is the Midnight Madness agreement between Premium Outlets at Pleasant Prairie LLC and Prime Outlets at Pleasant Prairie 2, doing business as Pleasant Prairie Premium Outlets and the Village of Pleasant Prairie. This is the sixth year for this agreement. The first agreement was in 2008. The purpose of this agreement is for there to be a payment in lieu of services to cover the Premium Outlet's expanded hours of operation. This occurs from 9 o'clock on Thanksgiving night through 8 o'clock, which is Black Friday, the following morning at 8 o'clock. So the hours that the center is typically closed, those are the hours that they are contracting with the Pleasant Prairie Police Department and Pleasant Prairie Police and Fire Department in order to cover the additional services that are going to be needed for this area of the village, for the shopping that they are doing out there. As you know, when we first started this in 2008, it was called Midnight Madness, and the shoppers came out in groves at midnight. Now they've kind of moved it up unofficially to 9 o'clock. So it's intense at midnight, but not the way it used to be. But it does provide police and fire protection during those hours, specifically where the officers and the equipment will be out there at Premium Outlets. So instead of waiting for calls. And it really has made for a nice shopping experience for the shoppers to see the extra police patrol and such out there. I don't know that they've had too many incidents since they stopped giving away the freebies, and having everyone stand in line. But I haven't been out there shopping at 2 for a couple of years, 2 in the morning. So I'm not sure exactly. I think that police or fire could respond possibly for that. The police department pay for 4 additional on-duty police officers and also the pay for 1 additional Pleasant Prairie parking officer to supplement the typical second and third shift officers is required. And then also with respect to the fire and rescue department, 1 additional on-duty on-site Pleasant Prairie fire medic to supplement the typical third shift fire and rescue department. As set forth in the staff memorandum, there are some estimates that have been put together. The police department, it involves $2,763.42. And for the fire and rescue department, $349.84. And I did work through both the police chief and the fire chief if you have any questions for myself or either of them. Staff recommends approval.
Yeah, one thing you may want to keep in mind is if for any reason you decide not to do it, under the new levy limits, if you were to come back a year later and do it, you'd have to reduce the levy by the amount of the fee. So if this existing fee is not allowed to continue, then we provided that service, taxpayers would have to subsidize it, which would work exactly opposite to what this is set up. So there still may be an issue whether or not we can charge any more than we charged last year. But at least, the fee is still intact. So.
And also, I'd like to add that this agreement is renewed each year, and we update it each year. If the village doesn't make any comments or references or modifications by June 1st, I believe it is, then it's assumed by Premium Outlets that everything is a go for the following Black Friday. So if we do want to make some changes or if there's changes that we need to make those comments by that point with them.
I think it's pretty much clear what we're trying to do here. I make a motion to support the agreement.
Second.
Motion by Steve, second by Monica for adoption of the agreement. Further discussion on this item. Mike is absolutely right. And, we keep getting these little surprises out of Madison. Cool. Eventually, it's going to affect the service the people receive because, unfortunately, we can't provide the service for nothing. And if they keep reducing our monies, it's going to affect the quality. And a lot of people came to this area because of the quality of service, especially a lot of the businesses and that. So if Madison doesn't realize what they're doing pretty soon, it's going to affect the business climate in our state.
Well, the end result is we say we can't do it because we're not budgeted for it. So, you know, one of the people that entities that pay a lot to the state in sales tax will not be open
right
during those times. So it's, you know, I think it's, you know, the unintended consequences of not knowing which lever to pull when you're making those decisions.
So. They keep saying local government doesn't create jobs, but we do create the environment, and they keep killing the environment. So, but with that, we had a motion and a second. No further discussion. Those in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? So carries. That brings us to item J. Consider a one-year Recplex sports sponsorship, agreement with Mattel Toy Store.
Mr. President, members of the board, the Recplex staff has worked with Mattel Toy Store for the past year and a half, and this is the culmination of our negotiations, and Mattel Store would receive the naming rights to the Southeast Athletic Field at Faces 165, so they'll be on the billboard there and a variety of signage within the Recplex. In return, they will provide us with a $10,000 sponsorship for 1 year. The staff recommends approval of this agreement.
So moved.
Second.
Motion by Steve, second by Clyde. Any further discussion?
Chris, who are they replacing, or who?
Actually, that board has been vacant for several years. So we'll have Talmer Bank on one field, and we'll have Mattel Store on the other. It's been vacant for about 4 or 5 years, so we're happy to have it filled up.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Now, that's a store out in Wilmot, Wisconsin.
Yes.
So that's, yeah. We have a motion. We have a second. No further discussion. Those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? So carries. Brings us to item K. Consider changes to Appendix A, Section 405 Municipal Code to amend the village's typical roadway cross sections.
Mr. President, Mike's going to describe for you what the cross section means, but I want to let you know why we're doing this. Again, under previous comment on levy limits, the village's ability to adjust the tax levy is now frozen. So whatever we have to work with is what it's going to be, at least for the next 2 years, and probably for some time in the future. One of the larger expenses within our capital budget, and that's funded by property taxes, is rehabilitating roads, repaving roads, doing new streets. So in order to ensure that new municipal roads that are going to be constructed in the future in residential areas, our previous cross-section was, I believe it was 8 inches of stone or 10 inches of stone and 4 inches of asphalt. And if you think about some of the newer subdivisions that we've constructed, it's held up, moderately well. It does need some various levels of surface treatment, whether it's a micropave or some surfacing on it to keep it viable. But a typical household in the village in a subdivision pays the village $800 in taxes. And that $800 in taxes has to pay for the police to go by it, public works to go by and plow the streets, clean the streets, and fire department to be able to take care of it. And one of the hardest things to take care of is going back and taking what could cost up to $3,000 a lot to go back and resurface it. And we could save all we want, but given the miles of street we have, it's important that we find a way to short-circuit that and establish a standard for residential subdivisions similar to what we've done in the corporate park, where, you know, the construction profile of those roads is going to last a lot longer, because we can't afford to keep going in and allow the developer to reduce the to improve the lots at a reduced cost, so that we can go back at a later time and get those things put up. As an example, we put in Lakeview Corporate Park. If you think back to 95th Street, which we did a year ago, that has 8 inches of concrete on it, stone underneath it, and then we had 1.5 inches of asphalt over it. Well, that's the busiest village road we have, and it carries the greatest load. You have, you know, tankers bringing in ammonia, aqueous ammonia into the power plant, plus all the truck deliveries that happen in Lakeview Corporate Park traverse that road. When we skinned that asphalt off the road last year, we only had some just minor work to do on the concrete base. Now, if that had been an asphalt road, we'd have been grinding up all the asphalt. We would have had probably some major base repairs to do given the load that's on there. So what we're looking for is for, in residential areas, is to eliminate the problem in the same way, where we're going to require a 7-inch course of asphalt and an inch and three-quarters of asphalt. Because as those roads, those homes are built on it, as trucks make delivery to it over time, to the various houses, you know, as we drive through with our garbage trucks, the roads will be able to withstand that work, so that at the end of 20 years or 25 years, you know, the most we're probably going to do is come back and just, you know, mill up the asphalt and put it right back down on the roads. It is going to lead to a certain level of increased expenses for people doing new development, but given the fact that the state has decided that, you know, we're not going to get any more money from what we have now, we can't afford to incur more expenses that are going to cost us, you know, asphalt work and road work in the future. So what I've asked Mike to do, and he'll describe to it, you know, what the different cross sections we're going to be requiring, and we'll be amending our ordinances to make that happen. So Mike, why don't you describe what you have in here for arterial and a collector street for residential uses.
Okay, do you want to pass over to a couple slides there? As Mike indicated, to achieve these goals, because of limited money and trying to develop sustainable infrastructure for the village, we looked at the cross-section of our residential streets. Go to the next one. This cross-section, which is part of our ordinance appendix, this is for a residential collector street. And the changes, the existing cross-section that we have is 49-foot from back of curb to back of curb. The existing section includes 6 inches of asphalt. As you know, we've typically done a lot of these streets in phases. First phase, or the binder layer, was 4.5 inches of asphalt, and then we'd put 1.5 inches on top. The new detail that we show up here still maintains the 49-foot back-to-back, but rather than the total asphalt section that we currently have, we're looking at doing 7 inches of concrete over the gravel base, and then 1.75-inch asphalt surface course. Again, this is similar to what we have in the corporate park, and as Mike alluded to, we've had really good success. When they milled off that asphalt last year, we had to replace minimal amounts of the base, so from a sustainability standpoint, it really held up. The other difference that you'll see in the cross section, if you recall, a number of years ago we did pass a bike and pedestrian plan, and this particular section includes sidewalks, 5-foot sidewalks on each side of the street. We think this is really the way that newer developments are going to be going because people do want to be able to walk and they want to be able to bike to places. So those are the major changes. Oh, and then the final change is that because of the sidewalks, the right-of-way that we'll need to dedicate from developers is increased from 80 to 82 feet. The next section is the regular residential cross section. The current width is 37 feet. The asphalt surface is currently 3.5 inches of binder course with an inch and a half of surface course for 5 inches total. And again, I just wanted to point out, as Mike had mentioned, what we see in some of our developments when they put in the binder course, and over the years and over the development, when they come in to put in the surface course, they have to rip out and mill a great amount of the existing asphalt. It's very costly. We're finding this in the Whispering Knoll subdivision that we're paving now, that we had to repair a lot of the binder course. So the new section will go to a concrete section with 7 inches of concrete base with 1¾ inches asphalt wear surface, and the addition of sidewalks. And in this particular case, the right-of-way is increased from the current 66 to 70 foot of right-of-way to allow for the construction of sidewalks. Again, from a sustainability standpoint, the other thing too, we went through a period where subdivisions were being built out in 3 years. Well, while we see it increasing, we're not sure it's ever going to get to those levels. And with this cross section, the new developments will be able to sustain, the heavy traffic from development, and they won't get beat up as the subdivision, as the homes are completed. So those are the major changes to the cross sections, and I think they meet our objectives for sustainability and also address, the ability to maintain the roads in the future. With that, I recommend that these be approved. I'd be glad to answer any questions.
I got questions. President? Mike, are we proposing eventually to eliminate phase two of any construction?
Yes.
So in that way we don't have to worry about letter of credit or nothing. Build it, complete it from the beginning, done with.
That is correct.
Okay.
What would happen, in the first phase of the subdivision, it actually depends on timing. They can probably do the gravel maybe 1 year, but that next year the road would be built, and we wouldn't have to go back and fight with letters of credit that we don't have enough money and so forth.
No more 70. But it'd just be the initial letter of credit. There's still letter of credit.
Yeah.
But it's just the initial.
Right, and there would still be a warranty period.
Okay.
But again, the section that we have will sustain the traffic that it sees.
So in one word, you're not going to no further 75% building before we complete the road. Correct?
Correct.
Okay, thank you. That's good. I make a motion to approve this.
Second. Motion by Steve, second by Clyde for adoption. Any further questions, discussions?
Mike, I have one question. What about existing roads that are in now? And let's say 8 years down the road, it fails. Subdivisions fail. Are we going to hold them to this requirement, or are they bound by previous work?
In this particular case, once the roads are fully improved, we accept them. So there are roads. So then that will actually be a decision that, staff and the board will make as to how we want to rehabilitate the road. That would be part of every year when we do the paving program. John has been doing a good job of rehabilitating the roads as we can. At some point, you know, it just depends on money, but it would be expensive to redo that to concrete.
Basically, all the houses and the driveways are all set, and all the utilities are set for an asphalt road. To come back in, you'd have to just hog out the whole thing, you know, and then put in a modified gravel base, put in the concrete and the asphalt. So that's why we have to change this, because right now, once we accept the road, we own it forever. So that, you know, the board really has, and future boards will have a question, you know, do you take and rehab those roads and do that on a tax roll, or do you do a special assessment and charge the people for a new road?
Yeah. Mike, when we go back to these failed roadways and we have to replace them and dig them up, are we finding that the proper procedure was followed? We have the right amount of gravel under there, the right amount of compaction. A lot of times, you know, utilities are put in, things like that. And that's one of the biggest causes for failure is when somebody's dug it up and not.
Yeah, I mean, I think that, you know, as we do some of these subdivisions that we're having to redo, we're seeing that, you know, the inspection has failed on it. In some cases where we don't have enough asphalt, the road isn't crowned, it's, you know, whatever problems. And to be honest with you, I mean, you know, I can pick on, you know, the current crop of developers and, you know, find all sorts of things they've done. But we have roads in the village that the town asphalted over topsoil. A lot of our roads are just, our older roads are crap, and that's a technical word speak for bad roads. But the newer roads are you know, I mean, they have a base. They're not as bad, but there are some limitations where, you know, a developer is going to, and that's the way they are, they're going to cut every corner they can. So if the inspector in the field didn't catch it, we're dealing with the issue today. So,
in a word, we're going to be more diligent in inspections.
Right.
Okay, we have a motion. We have a second. Any further discussion? Hearing none, those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? So carries. It brings us to item L, consider a professional construction engineering services agreement for Phase 4C of the binder paving in the Village Green Heights subdivision.
Back in February of 2009, the Village Board approved the request by the Land and Lakes to install curb and gutter and binder course within the Village Green Heights subdivision. This letter allowed them to pave early, and they have been gradually paving the streets out there on this basis. To that end, they've recently asked to install curb and gutter and binder course on 49th Avenue and a portion of 98th and Main Street. Go to the next one. This work is going to require construction, stakeout layout, and construction observation services. Nielsen and Mattson and Barber had submitted a proposal to Land and Lakes, which we reviewed to perform these services. This is similar to what we did last year when they paved 50th Avenue. And it did turn out well. I go to the next one. Right now, the area that you see in red is currently gravel. So they're looking at paving the binder course at the area in red. They're finding, you know, it's easier to market and easier to sell houses. I just wanted to interject. The pavement section that was approved in the development agreement is our standard pavement section. I did propose to the developer that they consider going to concrete, because if they did it now, this would be done. But once they do this, they're going to be, you know, subject to what we've been discussing, that at some point when they want to do the binder course, the surface course, they'll have to repair the binder course substantially, or whatever has been deteriorated over time. but we have agreed that they have a right to do this. So, again, we got a contract from Nielsen, Mattson, and Barber. I specifically asked for the inspector that was out there last year. He did a good job of checking the asphalt and so forth. So the amount that of this contract is $13,309.92. It's also important to note that this is not a village cost. The developer will reimburse the village for this. So I recommend that the board approve the contract for Nielsen, Mattson, and Barber to construct or to do the construction, staking, and administration for this project.
So moved.
Second.
Motion by Monica, second by Steve. For adoption, further discussion?
I might add, if you look at that map, what's gone? It shows the remaining. You can see what's in red, but if you look at the rest of Main Street going to the east, and then the next road, since we've adopted this new standard, that becomes the new standard. So
it's good.
So we can compare.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Mike, do we have any recourse to go back if when we hire these folks to watch over this? If they don't watch over it properly, we have to go back and open it up and replace stuff in that. They give us a warranty or anything on their inspection services?
No, they don't. I mean, we the failures we've had, we've ended up with patches. And then we end up with the inspector and the asphalt contractor pointing fingers at each other. The problem with an asphalt road is that, you know, once you lay it all out there, if it's wrong, you know, at least the specs we had now don't require them to relay the whole thing. You know, but if they need to get grade back or they need to raise a manhole or lower a manhole, you know, you end up with a, they'll make it work, they'll get the grades right, but you'll have a patch in the road. So it's you know, that's why my inclination is when somebody does that, then, you know, if that firm is going to do more work for us, they can't put that same person on the job, and we got to, you know, get rid of the ones that are not getting a job done for us.
So is that enough reason for disqualification?
We can't qualify. We're prohibited from qualifying professional services. For public works construction firms, we can pre-qualify them, but the engineering industry and architects were pretty successful in making sure that we're prohibited from pre-qualifying.
Steve?
Question for Mike. That's the case that we got in 2016. We got four patches.
Do have four patches. I don't think that was as much a bad engineering is that the soils were bad there and that sewer was settling once we were pounding away at the...
That's right. Okay.
You know, I can give you lots of other instances where, you know, the
well, I know that it was a brand new, I go many times over and see four patches.
Right.
Thank you. We have a motion, a second. Those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? So carries. Brings us item M. Consider Ordinance 13-42, amend Chapter 148 of the Municipal Code relating to the clean water utility definitions and modifications.
Mr. President, members of the board, staff is recommending an amendment to Chapter 148 of the Clean Water Utility Ordinance. First part would be creating an additional definition in Section 148-4 entitled Undeveloped Parcel to read, any parcel containing no permitted structure or improvement on the parcel. Also would be adding Section 148-5 sub E, exemptions. We'd be adding two exemptions to our current clean water utility. The first would be anything that has an undeveloped parcel within the floodplain overlay district and which are zoned C1 as defined in 420-128, and then also undeveloped parcels within the floodplain overlay district which are zoned PR2 as defined in 420-127 sub 1. These two exemptions are being added because these areas are similar to wetlands, ponds, and lakes. They generally contain few, if any, impervious surfaces and do not significantly contribute to the costs of managing stormwater. In many cases, these areas tend to assist in managing stormwater by allowing storm or floodwaters to occupy these areas. So I would recommend that the Village Board approve the above-mentioned amendments to the Clean Water Utility Ordinance, and I can answer any questions at this time.
Motion to approve. Second.
Motion by Clyde, second by Steve for adoption. Further discussion? Questions? Hearing none, those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? So carries. That brings us to item N, consider ordinance 13-43 to amend chapter 285 municipal code relating to satellite sewer collection systems and waste sampling.
Mr. President, members of the board, staff is recommending an amendment to sewer ordinance chapter 285. Recently, the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources has updated the sanitary sewer overflow, better known as SSO, on rule NR210.23(4), published on the July 31st Register 691, which was effective this past August 1st, 2013. The new rule requires satellite sewer collection system operators to implement a capacity management operation and maintenance, otherwise known as the CMOM program. The village has three satellite sewer collection operators, Westwood, Timber Ridge, and Cityview. Staff has also spent the time to update other chapters of 285, including the definitions, control manholes, metering of waste sampling, analysis, and reporting is attached. In part of your packet, I've included both the 210 and the NR 691. It's about 300 pages long, what they had made some minor changes on. So we basically took the highlights of those areas, incorporated them into our 285 ordinance, and we also worked with a professional counsel of Paul Kent, and we recommend the above-mentioned amendments to the sewer utility ordinance as presented in your packet.
Motion to approve ordinance 13-43.
Second.
Motion by Monica, second by Clyde for adoption of ordinance 13-43. Any discussion? If not, those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? So carries. Brings us to item O, consider an award of contract for placing the fence at Lake Andrea Beach.
Mr. President, members of the board, on July 29th, the bid announcement for replacing the fencing around the Lake Andrea Beach was advertised in the Kenosha News and distributed to all the contractors pre-qualified to work within the village for fencing. On August 14th, sealed bids were opened for the contract to install the fencing. Three bids were received: statewide fencing at the price of just over $28,000, century fence, and aluminum fence for just over $38,000, $10,000 more. The fence at Lake Andrea was constructed in 1994 and is currently 48 inches tall. There's been an issue with people jumping the fence, loss of revenue from people not paying for passes at the beach. The new fencing will be 72 inches or 6 foot tall, green vinyl coated cyclone fencing. Staff has also evaluated the gate location, sizes, and traffic flow. With the addition of beach volleyball at Lake Andrea, there will be a fence separating the beach from the volleyball area. Staff spent a lot of time with Chris Finkel, Tom Patrizzi, and Kevin Milak at the RecPlex, just to make sure that this new fencing, the way that we have it, really functions exactly how they want it to do. So with the addition of the beach volleyball, how we want to do rentals, it is the plan to have some large volleyball tournaments there, leagues there. The gate sizing, the security of the fencing has all been intact. And there are a lot of people that have been jumping the fence. It really hasn't been a very secure area. So these improvements will make that a secure area and hopefully increase some revenues for the beach area. And I can answer any questions at this time about that.
You say 6 feet, right?
That's correct.
Okay, thank you. Make a motion to approve.
Second.
Motion by Steve, second by Monica for adoption. Further discussion? Hearing none, those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? So carries. Brings us to item P, and that is to consider an award of contract to replace the roof on a salt shed located at the Roger Prang Municipal Center.
Mr. President, members of the board, on July 29th, the bid announcement to replace the roof on the salt shed, including the light panels, was advertised in the Kenosha News and was distributed to contractors pre-qualified to work within the village for roofing. On August 14th, 2013, sealed bids were opened for the contract. Two bids were received: Tri-County Contractors at the price of $47,833 and Engineered Buildings for $53,300 was the second bid. The approved budget for this project was $80,000. So bids came in very favorable from what we had projected on estimates from last year. The existing roof was installed in 1993 and has exceeded its useful life. The shingles were actually stapled on, so we've been having a problem with the shingles blowing off within the winds. So we made sure as part of the specification that we have them nailed as per the manufacturer's recommendations. Tri-County has built many salt sheds within the Midwest, and they're a very capable company to do that. As you can see, it's very steep on the side, very tall on the top, and replacing a light panel. It's something that you really want a professional doing. Recommend the contract be awarded to Tri-County Contractors to replace the roof, light panels, and any damaged plywood underlayment for the price of $47,833.20 and $1.82 for each sheet of plywood that needs replacement. I can answer any questions at this time.
Got a question for you. What size of plywood are you talking about?
It's a 4x8 sheet.
Huh?
A 4x8 sheet of plywood.
Wow, 182. Where do they get them?
I don't know, but I'm very happy to be paying it.
I do too, because it's really cheap. I kind of find that. What thickness?
It's a 5/8 sheet. 5/8 sheet of plywood, yeah. It's what was engineered by the building manufacturer. I do agree it's a very low price.
Wow.
I contacted the contractor, and he's like, that's what he's willing to do it for is $1.82 per 4x8 sheet. It's a great price.
I kind of buy that. Thank you.
Make a motion to approve.
Second.
Motion by Clyde, second by Steve. Further discussion. John, is that the original roof, or is this?
Yes, it is. This is the original roof from 1993 when the shed was constructed. It's starting to leak on the inside. We have done over the past maybe 8 years, done some roof repair and repaired a couple sheets of plywood as we see them, but the shingles are starting to curl and blow off, and it's been 20 years, and it's time to replace the roof now. So,
do you have any corrosion problems with the staples? Or?
It's not really a corrosion problem. It's just a lack of adhesion onto the plywood, and there really isn't a lot of surface area on the head of the staple and the shingle. So when we get the strong winds out of the west, we normally get a couple of shingles laying in the compost site the next day.
Okay.
I got another question for you. Do they put a base, they put a felt in the top of the roof before they put the shingles, or
yes,
they put the shingle on top?
Yes, they do. They will use standard roofing practices for this, so they will replace the felt also as a part of this project.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, we have a motion and a second. Any further discussion? Hearing none, those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? So carries. Brings us to item Q, and that is to consider an award of contract for cleaning services for the Village Hall and Roger Prang Municipal Center.
Mr. President, we've John's received bids, and we have one bidder for the cleaning services at the Village Hall and Prang. We'd like to have more than one bid. You know, we had, I forget how many people took out bids, but Clean and Green also subsequently came back and indicated that they had an error in their bid and they wanted to resubmit another number because they had underbid the amount of hours that needed to be done at Prang. Consequently, I've got a twofold recommendation. One is we reject all bids and go back out. The second one is enter into a one-month agreement with Clean and Green Solutions to do the work this next month. Our previous contractor is leaving the area. We didn't get a lot of notice. We got a 30-day notice, so we need to have cleaning services for that 1 month. So my recommendation is we award a one-month contract to Clean and Green, and we rebid the project again and see if we can get some more bidders on, you know, to the table to give us a price. The price that Clean and Green submitted wasn't bad. It was, you know, I think a couple hundred bucks more than last year on a monthly basis, but, you know, nonetheless, if we only got one, that's all we've got. So.
30 second time. I make a motion to go along with your recommendations just for 1 month.
Second.
Motion by Steve, second by Monica. That's for 1 month and to go back out.
Mm-hmm. We'll go back out right away.
Yep.
Right away.
Yep.
And what happens if we get no bids? What if Clean and Green doesn't submit?
Well, I think they've indicated they want a bid because they said they, you know, we know the next bid's going to be higher. But we got to go out and bid again, let some other people in. Otherwise, Clean Green's got a free way to the contract. So there was somebody that just didn't get their stuff together, as John indicated in his memo. And, you know, maybe if they get another month, they can get their stuff together. We had, I think it was five contractors do a pre-walkthrough.
Correct.
Look through all the facilities. So there was people interested, but they didn't submit their bidding documents. So
it was marketed on VendorNet. It's a state-approved Wisconsin contracting, and it went out to 139 vendors statewide, hoping that somebody would have a Milwaukee brand, something like that. As Mike indicated, we did a walkthrough through the praying with five contractors. One submitted a bid on time. Another one sent it via the U.S. Postal Service. Bid opening was at 10 a.m., and we received it at 11:17, so it's a non-responsive bid, and we have not opened it. So we do have two interested parties. Unfortunately, with the process, one of them was a little bit late, and we can't accept it, so staff would recommend, as Mike said, rebidding this.
Is the motion for today's dollars or their bid amount for the month?
Their bid amount.
Okay.
So we have a motion and a second. Now, one trustee has tried everything in this village, from climbing towers to riding police cars, fire trucks. Have you tried cleaning services?
Yeah, you tried it up, and I got for a month.
Could really help.
Yeah.
Fine.
Thank you. Mike, my question is, since we received one bid, we got one in late, if we go back and reissue the bid, does Clean and Green have grounds because we eliminated or disregarded their bid, knowing we have another bid that came in late?
No, because they wanted to alter their own bid. They wanted to be able to increase it without a bid. So they want to resubmit another bid as well because they bid too low. So, and it, to keep clean and green honest, that's why we should rebid it, because now they're going to have to compete against somebody else.
Okay. I just want to make sure that they can't come back at us.
Well, I mean, people come back at us all the time for all sorts of things, but, I mean, I don't think you would have any standing.
Oh, that's wrong.
So we have a motion and a second. Those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? So carries. That brings us to item R, and that is consider ordinance 13-44 to amend Chapter 242 of the Municipal Code relating to the dog park at Ingram Park.
Mr. President, members of the board, this evening we have before you the dog park rules for our new dog park at Ingram Park on the 5700 block of 93rd Street. These are the rules that have been developed by staff, approved by the Park Commission. We've had discussions with the Kenosha County Parks Department, administration, and a professional dog handling organization. We really spent a lot of time to go through to make sure that the dog park is safe, it's fair, we don't have any problems, and as a result of that, we have this beautiful sign which will be printed up and placed, and you know, you can really get as general or as detailed as you'd like to. We try to make the sign as appealing as we can by having many various sizes of dogs and greens with a whole bunch of words inside, which are our rules. I can go through, if you like, and read each of the rules as presented in your packet, but I believe that you guys have done that. And I guess with that, I can answer any questions about the dog park rules at this time. We are looking to open the dog park, have a grand opening on October 5th. So we're hoping to get this done, approve the sign, have it printed, and up before that grand opening in a couple weeks.
Is that the actual size of the sign?
The actual size of the sign is going to be a 36 by 48, 36 inches wide and 48 inches long, to make the letters as big as we can, font-wise.
Well, let's hear it for Wrigley.
Motion to approve. Second.
Leasing playground.
Motion by Clyde, second by Steve. Any further discussion? Hearing none, those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? So carries. Brings us to item S, consider resolution 13-19 to write off uncollectible fire department charges for services.
Mr. President, we've been using a service to try and collect, you know, fire department charges for services such as fire inspections, when we have to go on the highway for an accident, and In Wisconsin, Villages are the only public entity that cannot charge to stay on a highway. So it's hard to find somebody that's really good at collecting those services, because cities and towns, the state will pay for that. So the chief has selected, has been doing some investigation. We've he's recommended we enter into a contract with Andres Medical Building. And last year we've done that at a previous board meeting, but you know, that's the good news. The bad news is we have $53,000 and $80 of bills that haven't been paid that we need to write off the books. So that's from delinquent fire service charges dating from 2004 to 2009. So I'm requesting, and the finance director is requesting authority to write that off our records.
Motion to approve resolution 13-19.
Second.
Second. Motion by Monica, second by Steve. Adoption resolution 13-19. Further discussion? Hearing none, those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? So carries. Brings us to item T, consider denial of a fourth invoice submitted by Ron Sierra for perceived use payments on parcel number 93-4-123-203-0200.
Mr. President of the Board, Mr. Sierra is claiming that he is providing a service to the village that we are not paying for, and that he's submitting a claim, and the village is not recognizing that he's providing a service to us, and as such, I recommend the claim be denied.
So moved.
Second.
Motion by Monica, second by Clyde for denial. Further discussion?
When are you going to stop?
We do have our insurance company, the legal insurance, is looking at that, and they may be forwarding a letter to Mr. Sierra to cease and desist.
Okay. Thank you.
Those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? So carries. Brings us to item U, consider reappointment to Community Development Authority.
Mr. President, I'm recommending that Joseph Korski, a current alternate on the CDA, be reappointed for a term to run to October 7th, 2014.
So moved. Second.
Motion by Clyde, second by Steve. Further discussion? Hearing none, those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? So carries. Brings us to item B, consider operator license applications on file.
There's just three applications tonight: Alicia Miller, Lindsay Peterson, and Destiny Strange. I recommend approval of all three.
So moved. Second.
Motion by Steve, second by Clyde for operator license application approval. Those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? So carries. Item W, set 2013 trick-or-treat hours.
One of the great issues of our time that we still have complete control over.
The only thing
is establishment of trick-or-treat hours. Historically, the village and the city have done it on Sunday afternoon. As close to the date as possible. That's done a number of things where, you know, the little monsters are out while it's still daylight, and people are generally home so they can get their kids out. The city this year has decided to do it on the actual day in the evening, so that will involve a lot more opportunities, you know, for excitement. So, I mean, the staff's recommending that we maintain the existing hours we have and have it on Sunday the 27th. So it would be different than the city's. I have heard that there's some wincing going on at the city whether or not they're going to stay with that existing date that they proposed. We have had numerous citizen requests that we have it on Sunday, that we maintain it the way that it is, because they're making plans for the event. So with that, you know, it's going to be a little bit difficult since the boundaries are a little dicey in certain areas, but and I'm well, we would have the opportunity where Pleasant Prairie kids could, if they could get out on Thursday night, they can go out, and the city kids, if they want to, you know, work the village neighborhoods on Sunday, they could do that too. So
both ways.
Both ways.
And I look at it as a public safety issue as well,
yes,
because we don't have sidewalks everywhere in the village.
No.
And
yeah,
we also have 45 and higher speed limits, and if children are walking on the roads, as they are, with their masks and such, yeah, I just see some problems happening.
I like it that way.
And we stated we have a lot of new subdivisions where the folks commute to work, don't get home until 5 o'clock.
Right.
So works out better on Sunday.
Make a motion to approve.
Second.
Sunday. Motion by Steve,
sorry,
second by Clyde.
Sunday the 27th from
yes,
3 to 6?
3 to 6, yeah.
If you live on the border, you can double your pleasure. So,
I get
any
it
further
time,
discussion? Hearing none, those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? So carries. Item 8, Village Board comments. I guess the first comment I want to make is thank you, John, and thank Ruth and everybody that worked on the committee, and especially the Village Parks people and your staff and everybody that did such a great job out at Prairie Springs Park with the moving wall. I mean, I heard nothing but positive comments from the people out there. It was well appreciated by the veterans and well received by the public. So I think this morning they said there was, starting at 7 o'clock, 2,000-plus school kids out there to view
yeah,
the moving wall, to learn a little bit of the history. It was just a great job, and especially to the volunteers that manned the tents and computers and looked up the names for the people, and a great service. So make sure you thank them all, and you guys did a great job, and especially you. You were out there all the time. I don't know if you were out there in the rain Sunday or not. But
I got a little wet.
Got a little wet. All right. But everything went well, and people, I didn't hear one grumble.
I heard people say they want to have it again here. That's some of the veterans I'm talking.
Have it what?
To having the moving wall again in Pleasant Prairie. They say it's
well,
an ideal location.
I think the beauty of it is it moves around to different communities
yeah,
and gives
oh,
the
yeah,
opportunity.
Exactly.
And you got to remember this generation is getting a little older, too, and going to be the next in line following the World War II and Korean folks. And if you look at some of the veterans and their health issues from some of the stuff they encountered in Vietnam, the Agent Orange and other thing, that's a generation that's aging fast, so unfortunately.
And I would just like to hope that everyone has the opportunity to go out to Ingram Park on Saturday, October 5th, for the grand opening of the dog park. I know I will be out there with Sir Wrigley. So
I should bring
we're looking
my
forward
too,
to seeing everyone out there.
I should bring my dog.
Yep.
And I also want to add thank you, Chief, because your folks did a great job out there. The Honor Guard, the
everybody,
fire department,
yes,
was hot that day during the ceremony. You helped a lot of people out there. Once again, it was just, you guys all did a great job, so thank you.
You know, John?
Got a dog park, Halloween, premium outlets. What else haven't we covered? So, and Monica's going to clean house.
Yes.
Motion to adjourn.
Dog park.
Second.
Motion a second for adjournment. Those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? So carries.